Hey everybody, quick update on the World SF Tour fundraiser. We are, as of the recording of this little part, at $153, which is not bad for only having been open for a little bit. Word is still kind of getting out, but just wanted to let everybody know there will be some of the first milestone perk stuff going up. I will put a link and whatnot on the blog at skiffingfanny.com. But in any case, thanks to all the folks who've donated, however little you might have, or however much. And if you are obviously interested in seeing us do a lot more, we're going to start setting up interviews for Worldcon pretty soon here, and you'll hear news about that as we go along. But if you want to support this and make sure that we can really make this happen, can you go on skiffingfanny.com, little thing on the side there, and do help out. Even $5 helps. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and I really hope you enjoy this episode on New Zealand SF.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, yes. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffing and Fanny Show, episode 192.
Exploring the SF scene in the real life Middle Earth, New Zealand.
I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
And we have three special guests today. We have Helen Lowe, Norman Cates, and Stephen Minchin. We'll start by having each of you say a little bit about yourself. So I'm just going to go from what is my left to right, which we'll start with you, Helen. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your writing, and that kind of thing.
Hi, Helen Lowe, as you've said. I am a novelist, an SFF novelist, and I'm also a poet, and I do a few interviews with other SF people as well. And, yep, I live here in Christchurch, New Zealand, and so far I've had three books published in the US and the UK.
And one of them has been translated into, like, 9 bazillion different languages, if I recall correctly.
9 bazillion is probably a little much. about three so far, as yeah. Well as English, yeah.
Yep, and that's The Air of Night,
Yes, that is The Air of Night, which is the first novel in my epic quartet that I'm currently writing, epically.
Excellent. All right, and we'll jump to you, Norman. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, so I live in Wellington, New Zealand, which is the south of the North Island. I run conventions, and I'm involved with the SF scene and LARPing and role-playing and media and, oh my goodness, a lot of stuff. I work at Weta Digital, and I am trying to get a Worldcon in New Zealand off the ground.
I approve.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
That would be really awesome.
Yeah, hard job, but yes.
Yeah, definitely. Excellent. And do you want to tell anybody about any of the projects you might have most recently worked on?
Well, most recently at Weta, worked on Desolation of Smaug, before that, Avengers and Iron Man. I've also been involved with various science fiction conventions here in New Zealand, a lot less than in previous years, but that's partly because my job is very busy sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you would be quite busy every time Peter Jackson decides, hey, let's have a trilogy.
Yeah. It's like, oh, cool. Right, I'll see you all in about, 2 months. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, and we'll jump to you, Stephen. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Cool. Hi, my name's Stephen Minchin. I run a small press here, also in Wellington, New Zealand. The company's by the name of Steam Press. Started that about just coming up to 3 years ago. Been releasing 3 books a year and seeing what I can do just publishing New Zealand science fiction and fantasy, which has been going pretty well. Definitely a huge number of authors out there, a lot of really talented authors, which is great, and a lot of keen readers. But finding it interesting, given just the size of the market. I mean, New Zealand's so small that a book that does well sells, you know, a couple of thousand copies. Like, a book that does really well sells a couple of thousand copies. And, yeah, just working in that market and trying to sell books overseas as well.
Excellent. Okay, well, great. And I imagine that the questions we'll ask all, everybody, it'll be really interesting because you all are working in very different sides of the field. And in case Norman is working two very different sides, the kind of fandom side and the sort of film world. So it'll be interesting to kind of see the questions we ask and how they relate to each of the things that you guys are most close to. But I wanted to start, which I found was really hard trying to look this up myself. There's very little written about New Zealand's science fiction and fantasy as in terms of its history. I mean, you could certainly like dig up little things like the films that they've made, and you can look up specific works, but as in terms of like an actual history of how it started. And I was really curious because the only thing I could find was there's some argument that Sir Julius Vogel, of which there's an award named after him, is considered to be the first science fiction writer in New Zealand. He wrote a book called Anno Domini 2000, or Woman's Destiny, which I thought was a really interesting when I read up on it, and it involved women in positions of power, and then learning this little tidbit that New Zealand was the first modern nation to vote for women's voting rights, which is, I mean, you guys get like 8,000 brownie points for that. So, I was curious about the kind of history. And I know that noted that not all of you are historians, but you might have a specific sort of perspectives on the development of the genre in your particular part of the world. So I'll just start left to right again and start with you, Helen, to kind of your take on this.
Yeah, funnily enough, I was thinking about that ahead of the podcast, not specifically Sir Julius Vogel and Anno Domini, but SF in New Zealand, particularly in relation to literature, which is more my thing. And I'd say my perception, which may be quite wrong, so, you know, I'm happy for my fellow panelists to shout me down, but, my perception is that, you know, certainly when I was growing up, that SFF was something, you know, that happened from overseas there, you know, that mainly the writers you were reading in the genre weren't New Zealand writers. Now, later, I found that that wasn't correct. You know, there were some writers like Cherry Wilder, for example, that were definitely Kiwi writers, but I just didn't know that at that time. And I think that has much more started to change, you know, within the last sort of 10 to 15 years. You get a lot more New Zealand books being published, and knowing that they are New Zealand authors, so you get authors like Elizabeth Knox, for example, just to throw one name out there. But with The Vintner's Luck was her first book. But even with that, when I thought about it a little bit more, and I went, yeah, okay, so not a lot of SFF or identifiable SFF, but I thought another trend that's always been quite strong in New Zealand literature is magic realism. And so if you think, you know, full-on science fiction fantasy, then, you know, I'm kind of going, okay, there's not that much. But if you look at books that sort of purport to be more mainstream, and in a way The Vintner's Luck is one of them, they actually have that magic realism element in them, and to some degree or other. So one of our most famous books, The Bone People, which won the Booker Prize and everything about a quarter of a century ago, also has magic realism elements in it. So I think the actual thread is there, but it's just not on the surface, which is why you don't find a lot written about it, maybe. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we'll jump to you, Norman. What's your take?
Quite a few years ago when we were working out the Sir Julius Vogel Awards, because I was involved with creating the Science Fiction and Fantasy Association of New Zealand, which we decided we needed a consistent organization to help, you know, administer awards, and we set up the Sir Julius Vogel Awards. But we also found there's a book called Erewhon by Samuel Butler, which was technically rather before the Sir Julius Vogel book. But for various reasons, you know, we voted in Sir Julius Vogel as the name. But, you know, so there is a history beyond that point. I also wonder whether there's a certain – New Zealand culture is sometimes quite different from other parts of the world, especially America. And it's – we can be very self-effacing, and also sometimes we have a bit of cringe, as it were, towards our own works, things we've done ourselves. And there's a certain amount of, oh, no, it's fine, but, you know, it's not great kind of thing. And other countries or other cultures are rather better at self-promotion and certainly at a cultural level than New Zealanders sometimes can be. I just want to actually give a shout out to Helen as well, because Helen's been doing, you know, a lot of great work online and in person to, you know, publicize New Zealand work in general. You know, not just her own stuff, which is completely, you know, which would be completely legitimate, of course, as well. But, you know, it's great that she goes out there and she says, hey, look, we should be doing this stuff and reading, you know. And so that's really appreciated, because there is a certain amount of problems that New Zealanders have when they come across a New Zealand work. At least this is my experience, where it's like, yeah, maybe it's good, maybe it's not. But, hey, look, here's someone from overseas. They're probably better. And that's not necessarily fair or true at all. And that's just one of those things I think as a culture we're working through and getting a bit better about. So that may explain some of why sometimes these things can be a bit obscure. That was my anthropological explanation for how for this might be happening. But yes, I shall shut up now.
What about you, Stephen?
I thought Norman's response just then was really interesting. One thing that I've noticed is that, well, most New Zealand authors of science fiction and fantasy are published by publishers in the US or the UK. So there are some very prominent, productive authors in New Zealand who you'd potentially never identify as a New Zealander because they're not published here. And I'd be in the bookshop looking at a science fiction or fantasy book and then realize, like, reading the blurb, looking at everything, not realize that they were a Kiwi until I read the author bio, because there's just no indication of that. And Norman's absolutely right. The cultural cringe that New Zealanders have can be pretty bad. That if it's an American writing a book, then it'll be great. If it's a Kiwi writing a book, then yeah, it might be all right, but we'll go with the American instead, which is a terrible thing. As far as the history goes, I actually grew up reading New Zealand science fiction and fantasy to some extent. Certainly there was a lot more British and American authored works in the bookshops and in the library, but there were some really successful and productive Kiwi authors. I'm thinking Under the Mountain by Morris G, a trilogy, young adult trilogy, which came out, started in 1979, the first book came out, and really big hit, did really well. I'd say there are probably not very many kids of my generation, I was born in 77, who wouldn't have read that or at least been aware of it. So I think there have always been books published. There's always been that science fiction fantasy being published, but just a small amount and just kind of slowly building. I think there's definitely been more in the last 10 years, yeah.
Can I cut in? Oh, I'm sorry, we got an echo for a second. Start again, Helen.
I was just going to ask Stephen, would you think it's fair to say that there's a lot more children's books published here in the past rather than adult fantasy, and there's, or say adult sci-fi rather, sci-fi fantasy, and even now that would be true?
Yes, no, that's definitely, I'm absolutely certain that's true. The as far as I'm aware, I'd say it's absolutely true that New Zealand publishers are far more open to the idea of publishing a children's or young adult science fiction or fantasy book than an adult sci-fi or fantasy book. there are very, very few New Zealand publishers, or particularly larger publishers, who would publish in an adult science fiction book.
And of course, the other thing is that a lot of Kiwis do go overseas, and I think you alluded to it, Stephen, that we don't realise that the authors that we're reading are New Zealand authors. And because a lot of Kiwis, as we call ourselves, do go overseas and stay overseas. So then you get authors like Juliet Marillia, for example, who's lived in Australia most of her adult life, but is a New Zealand author. So, yeah.
And it's certainly not something that's advertised. I can't think off the top of my head of any books published over here by New Zealand authors that where it says, from a New Zealand author. It's sort of very downplayed. It's in the bio, presumably, but it's certainly not something that's sort of drawn out, and I'm not sure why that is, but there's probably a reason somewhere. Maybe not a profound reason, but I see that Julia had a hand, so I'll let Julia jump in.
Yeah, so we've been talking about the general history of New Zealand science fiction and fantasy writing, but I'm actually wondering about all of your personal histories and how you got involved with the science fiction and fantasy scene there and what your experience of that has been. And I'd like to start with Norman, who is running this Worldcon bid. How did you get to the point where you were actually bidding to run a Worldcon?
Oh my goodness, there's a story. from a personal history, my parents have moved around a lot during the years, so I've lived in America and the UK and Papua New Guinea, actually, for large chunks of time. We came here when I was 14, and I found a science fiction club, which was actually a modelers club in Auckland. Joined them, started doing makeup and prosthetics, blah, 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 history, and then eventually got tapped on the shoulder to go and work on Lord of the Rings in prosthetics. And during all of that time, from the science fiction club, you know, there were people doing things. The thing that I like doing things. I like making things. I like organizing things because, you know, that way you're creating something. You're actually making something as opposed to just consuming. During that time, I organized two. I was chair of two national science fiction conventions, and I've helped organize many, many others. And in 2004, I was the Duff delegate to the Worldcon in Boston. The US. Duff stands for the Down Under Fan Fund, because there's this, if you're not aware of it, there's a whole lot of what are called fan funds, which basically are voting, people stand for this particular fund, and it's to send them to another country. It's kind of hands across the world for fans. So in this case, Duff goes from Australasia to the Worldcon, which is often in the US, but sometimes it will be elsewhere. The point of Duff is to go to the US, so it might not be a Worldcon, it might be the US National Convention if the Worldcon is not in the US that year. But it was an amazing opportunity to go and meet other fans at a Worldcon. I mean, this is the World Science Fiction Convention, and it's not the size of, say, a Comic Con or Dragon Con. It's 5,000-6,000 people, but it's very much concentrated science fiction, and it's literature, it's media, it's everything. It's lots of people really talking closely to each other, and that's what excited me about it, is that it's very interactive. It's not just sitting there and looking at things. It's actually taking it in and then giving it back out again. So actually, at that Worldcon, at the 2004 Worldcon, right at the end. You know, you're tired and you're emotional and you're like, this was amazing. And I said to a group of four people, I think, just vaguely, I'd kind of like to run a Worldcon in New Zealand sometime. And they all handed me $20 each. And I went, and I looked at this and went, what? Why are you giving me money? They had to explain, this was how naive I was. They had to explain to me that people who say they want to run a Worldcon, you have this thing called pre-supporting, which is basically a Kickstarter for a Worldcon, and people just give $20 of their currency. So effectively they were saying, here, we have faith, or we want you to do this or something. So I didn't really do anything more about that for quite a few years. But I held on. I will say that I held on to those $20, that $80 sitting there, and I wrote their names down in a notebook. And in 2010, the Worldcon was in Australia, and we had a convention here in New Zealand the week before the Australian Worldcon. And I was there, and I won't go into the full story because you can read it on the New Zealand in 2020 website if you want to. But basically, I got pushed over the cliff by by Sean Williams, effectively, because there was a whole bidding thing, and at the end of it, he won, and he said, "Norman, I want you to run a Worldcon in 2020." And I opened my mouth, and then literally there were $20 bills flying at me. Probably 20 or 30 people immediately said, "Okay." So, and I accepted that. I was like, "Okay, fine, we will try this." Since that time, it's just been a process of finding out, you know, whether New Zealand can do it, from a technical, logistical point of view, but also from a people point of view. That was a really, really quick skim. I could go on forever, as I have discovered previously, so I may just pause there and let someone else have a word.
All right, why don't we jump to you, Stephen?
My entry into the world of New Zealand science fiction fantasy was reasonably abrupt. I quit my job it'd be 4 years ago now, and I'd been a consultant. It was miserable, and I had to wear a suit and blah. It was ghastly. So I woke up one morning and I said, "This is rubbish." And I told my wife that I wanted to quit and do something fun, and somehow came up the idea that publishing would be the coolest thing in the world to do. And so I went and studied publishing for a year, did a postgrad diploma in publishing, and then as that course progressed, we had a lot of publishers come in and visit us. There's only the one publishing course in New Zealand, which I'm actually teaching, a tutor on that course now, and every week we have a guest speaker come in. So someone from Random House would come in, someone from HarperCollins, from Victoria University Press. People would come in and talk to us each week. And there were quite a few people in the class of 16 of us. Quite a few of us were into science fiction and fantasy. And question popped up quite often about whether they would publish New Zealand authors of science fiction and fantasy. And resolutely, the answer was no. They weren't interested. And I was sitting there week after week, and didn't take too long, only took a couple of months of that before I was sitting there thinking, well, if they're not going to do it, then maybe I should. So halfway through that year of study, I set up Steam Press and just decided to, you know, chuck it out there and see what happens. And I convinced my wife that this was a good idea by telling her that, you know, chances are, you know, you set up a company like this, no one's going to pay any attention. No way would an author send you a book. They've never heard of you. It'll be really slow. It'll probably be, you know, could be a year before anyone sends us anything that's worth publishing. But the day that I put the website up, I started getting submissions. Within a month, I had three novels that were publication worthy, and pretty much just had to, you know, man up and do it. There was no way to avoid it. So just had to dive in and get stuck in. So, yeah, it's just been a roller coaster from there.
All right, and what about you, Helen?
Well, no story nearly as interesting, I'm afraid. I've always been a big reader. It's not surprising. I'm a writer. So I always just read every SFF book I could get my hands on, basically, when I was growing up. And as it's continued, my love of SFF has continued into adulthood, including the desire to write SFF. I also, you know, love, you know, movies when the few good ones that come my way. And so it's books and movies. And when I started, you know, when I started writing the books myself, when my first book was published, SF fans, you know, which Norman is associated with, were kind enough to invite me along to one of their cons, which is how I discovered the world of conventions, because until then I was a shy and reclusive fan of the genre. And and since then as well, I'll just mention that in New Zealand, so SF fans has been around for quite a while in various forms, I think. Also recently they started up a group called Specfic NZ, Speculative Fiction New Zealand, and that is focused on writing, on creative SFF. So I'm a member of both organisations. So, yeah, that's me.
Excellent. So this actually leads me to one of the things I was curious about. Since all of you have described sort of how you've come to be where you are now, and there's drastically different, and in large part because what you do is, I mean, obviously, Helen, you're primarily a writer. Norman, you're sort of, you have two different I guess you would call them professions almost, one on this almost convention side, which is basically like a full-time job, yep. And Stephen in publishing. And so from your perspectives, what I was curious about is in what exists in New Zealand in the speculative fiction genres, what are some of the core themes, either in the literature itself or even perhaps concerns or issues that are maybe part of the fandom that is sort of being worked around at the moment? So I'm just going to pick a name at random and start with Stephen.
Oh, God, I was hoping you weren't going to say that. I wanted someone else to answer first so that I could use their answer. I think there's definitely, in New Zealand, there's definitely a lot of a focus on just environmental issues in general. We do picture ourselves as a very green nation, and I think issues around climate and pollution and everything along those lines are definitely an issue. I've noticed with submissions that I've received, so definitely authors are very conscious of those kinds of issues. A lot of, post-apocalyptic books being written here, which I guess is following an international trend there as well. What else? I think... interesting, with, again, harping back to the idea of New Zealand, New Zealanders having not being so confident in their own work and potentially being more interested in what's being written overseas. I think there's been, again, in the submissions that I've been sent, very distinct split in what the authors that I've read are writing, in that some of them are going very much down a New Zealand route with using New Zealand themes, books being set in New Zealand, indigenous Maori people using their mythology. And then on the other side of the coin, I've read quite a few novels that are wholly set in the US or the UK, and you'd never know that they'd been written by a Kiwi. So definitely writing for that market, which I've found really interesting.
Actually, you just sprayed something that I was going to ask about separately, but since you brought it up, I think it's a great time to just kind of include this in this discussion. You mentioned that the local indigenous group, the Maori, are actually starting to include some of their own voice within the speculative fiction community. I mean, presumably even longer than just sort of like fairly recently. And I was hoping you could maybe, and if others can obviously jump in on this too when they go to their responses, talk a little bit more about that. I mean, so there is a sense that they are being involved, they're not sort of removed from this field?
Oh, certainly. I would, of the books that I've been sent, I just published a book called The Wind City, which is set in Wellington, with it's an urban fantasy, but entirely using the Maori mythology, which is really cool. But that was actually written by a young woman without any Māori blood. As far as the Māori authors go, one of the guys that I'm going to be publishing this year has got some Māori ancestry. I used to work for a Māori publisher in Wellington by the name Huia Publishers, and they specialised in educational books and also fiction and poetry with a Pacific focus. And they published a lot of Māori authors, and certainly I've published a number of science fiction and fantasy books using that mythology. I definitely think it's growing. It's been neglected for so long, and now it's definitely there's been a resurgence in the last few years, which is fantastic. It's completely unique. It's different from anything that I've seen elsewhere, and it's really cool to be reading that as a New Zealander and having grown up without knowing. I mean, I didn't know a hell of a lot about that at all. And finding that that's being written about and there are so many books being published now is brilliant. It's cool.
Excellent, excellent. So I'm going to jump over to Helen. You can obviously jump on this last thing or just kind of even the more general question of kind of thematic content, but I'll let you kind of jump in there.
Yeah, well, and I'll start with Māori literature, if that's okay.
Sure.
Keeping or thinking about that SFF angle. But some of New Zealand's most well-known novelists and poets are Māori New Zealanders. So I mentioned Kerry Hume's The Bone People, in relation to winning the Booker Prize and also saying, well, this is a book that has magic realism elements. And Kerry is a New Zealander of Ngāi Tahu, she's Ngāi Tahu Māori New Zealander. That's her primary identification. And so we have other authors like Patricia Grace, her first book, Mutu Whenua, The Moon Sleeps. Again, on the surface, realism, but beneath it you have, magic realism draws on Māori supernatural beliefs, if you like, and they're a really important part of the book. Mm. And then I'd also mention another author, New Zealand author, primarily of Māori identification, Kelly Anna Moray, with Bloom, which was what I call almost a hybrid novel. She's a more recent, younger novelist, and it's culturally hybrid between New Zealanders of European ethnic origin. We use a shorthand Pākehā, which is actually a Māori word, and Māori and Chinese, which is another, you know, there's another cultural element there, same as in the US with Chinese people who came as part of the settlement. So these are authors who are New Zealanders, but they're also New Zealand Māori authors. I live in Christchurch, and a few years back we had these big earthquakes, and in response to that, Anna Caro and the other editor's
Kelly.
Name. Sorry?
Kelly Buchanan?
No. It's actually Stephen, do you know she's in New Plymouth? She co-edited Tales for Canterbury with Anna. Anyway, I will think of her name in a minute. But it was a fundraiser and a collection of short stories. And amongst those short stories, the same thing Stephen pointed out, that there are a lot of different threads coming in culturally to the story writing, including Māori. But one of the writers, who is another younger New Zealand writer, Tina Makareti, who's also a Māori writer, had a marvellous story in there, which drew on I think it's called Shapeshifter, Shape Changer, something like that, but it drew on the origin, the Pānea of the Reef, which is a Māori legend from part of the Hawke's Bay part of the country. So I think that there is that is quite a strong theme in our literature, and especially, you know, that because the Keller Annamore book Bloom also has a lot of magic realism in it. And the other author that I think that I would particularly mention, or as a couple, Karen Healy, who is published in the US. She's a young adult author. Her first novel, Guardian of the Dead, drew extensively on Maori folklore and mythology. And there's also another local New Zealand author, Lee Murray, published a kid's book called Battle of the Birds, which is all based around the myth. So anyway, raving on. I think it is. It is quite predominant and quite strong, actually. And for me, it's important to acknowledge that a lot of the people writing the stories as well are Maori authors. And yeah, so now the other part of the question was, just coming in quickly, I think, was themes, I believe, in New Zealand SFF. So sure. I think that's obviously one. But two others that I'll speak about a little more quickly, because I spent a lot of time on the other part, is themes that I've always detected in New Zealand literature generally and in New Zealand film. But I think it's also in the SFF as well, is what I would call person alone. And there was actually a book published in the 30s, I think, called Man Alone, which is like one of these classics. But the person alone, the person who is out of step with mainstream society, and I think that comes through in the films as well, quite strongly in the films quite often. So it's almost like there's a sense of disconnection there. And I don't really know what that's about. You don't seem to get quite so many books, especially for adults, the range of stories, you know, sort of so much celebrating ourselves, if you know what I mean, and saying, hey, we're great at sport and writing a great sporting story, or where, you know, a great family story. I mean, you can find examples, but there's often a sense of almost anxiety or, disconnection, I believe. Oh,
excellent.
Yeah.
All right, shall we jump to Norman, or?
That would be great. Hey, so yeah, just to build a little bit on what Helen was saying, one of the cinema tropes that New Zealand has tended to have is what has been called the cinema of the unease, which is largely what she was describing. And you know, it's that thing where, you know, is it, you know, what's happening, and it's what I actually call depressing. So I'm actually really glad that New Zealand as a culture and as a artistic expression is moving away from that, because I like movies that are at least have some element of, you know, joy or hope to them, and there is that in New Zealand cinema, and I can't really speak as much to the literature, but and I was very glad, you know, when these things started coming out more. And honestly, when it became more commercially viable, when it actually became acceptable to make a movie that might make money, instead of being ashamed of it, it was like, oh, yes, let's actually do something useful. So anyway, that was my little rant about that. So the amount of probably, of course, Peter Jackson has some of the greatest influence on what people think of New Zealand cinema. But, you know, he's one man and has made these things. But also, if you remember, he also made Heavenly Creatures, which is also very much a dark, depressing film. And that was the point of it. Now, as far as, yeah, so that's probably my thing about themes and so on, as such as it is, because other people have dealt with that a lot better. But it's actually been really interesting over the last month, year, on various online forums I'm involved with convention running. Themes of inclusiveness are coming up, And I'm sure they've been there before, but it's very much an undercurrent, and how to keep or get, as it were, minorities or people who aren't normally represented in fandom into fandom. So it's a very interesting thing, because there's certainly, when I look around our science fiction conventions in New Zealand and overseas and so on, it's very much a, you know, look at all the very pale skins, as it were. And I'm not, that's not a bad thing, but the fact is that you have to, you know, where is it, because I don't know why, but are we actually doing enough to advertise to other groups of people, other nationality, other, you know, races and ethnicities? And I don't know. It's something I'm working through as well, because, you know, you don't want to be condescending, because I'm a bit scared of that personally. But you want to make sure people feel like, you know, they can be included as well. So yes, yeah, so that's just a side note of something interesting happening sort of around the world as well. It's actually been just one little final thing. I love acting, and I'm involved, you know, with filmmaking and so on. I just joined a group which does a group of writers, group of actors, and the writers write scripts and the actors read those scripts in a dramatic manner, you know, to see how the scripts are going. And over the last 3 weeks I've been doing this, every script out of 12, every script except one or two out of 12 or 13 scripts that we've done has had fantasy or science fiction themes to it. It's been really interesting. I don't know whether it's, you know, obviously this is one group, so the sample size is tiny. You can't draw a plot from that. But it's fascinating to me that there's this thing where all these people are going, look, science fiction and fantasy is cool and fun, and let's have some fun with it. And that's really encouraging to me. So I'm keeping an eye on this, and obviously I'm taking part because it's good fun. But quite coincidentally, this happened 3 weeks ago, and now we're talking about it here. Hmm.
Excellent. Well, Helen did put her hand up in another window, and I think she wanted to actually address the point you were making, Norman, about inclusiveness. I think that's what she said. So why don't you jump in there, Helen?
No, sorry. I wasn't responding specifically to Norman. I just wanted to note that I have remembered the name of the co-editor of Tales of Canterbury, Cassie Hart, who's based in New Plymouth, I believe, and is a SpecFic NZ member. So, yeah, she and Anna Caro were the co-edited that anthology.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Yeah. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes, including the other names and whatnot that have been mentioned, because I think that'll be really good so folks can kind of look this stuff up and find it. So I see Julia wanted to, did put a hand in, and I'm guessing she wants to jump to another thing. I'll just say really quick, Norman, you're absolutely right. This is almost like a huge international trend, this idea about inclusiveness, and it's becoming much, much larger and becoming, I think it's fair to say, a normal part of the conversation now. And I think it's really great that you acknowledge this kind of like, well, how do we go about including without being condescending? Because you can't just say, hey, we want you because you're a minority, because that's kind of rude and offensive, actually. You know, you want it to be a natural, organic process, and that's a very difficult thing, I think. But Julia, why don't you jump in with your next question?
Okay, so I also agree that the inclusivity issue is something that I think internationally science fiction fandom is thinking about a lot and grappling with. And hopefully we are coming up with more ways to be more inclusive. I know that there was the SF World Fund that started a while ago, and Charles Tan was the first person to be sent to an international con with that. So hopefully more things like that will help. And more things like this, where we're actually reaching outside of our own culture to try to find out what else is out there because we think it's cool and want to know. But what I was actually wondering on the theme of reaching outside of my own culture and not knowing things is, so you mentioned that Peter Jackson is pretty much the name that we all think of. We think of Weta as this amazing place where amazing special effects and props come out of. And we think of Peter Jackson's movies as basically what is New Zealand and cinema. And I'm wondering, how big is the cinema industry there? Are there movies that you think we should be looking for that we might not have seen or heard of? And similarly with books as well. So I just kind of want to throw this out there. What is New Zealand-based stuff that we should be checking out? And I guess I'll start with Norman because I started with the Weta stuff.
It actually can be hard, even sitting here, to find out what people are doing and making for exactly that reason, that people sometimes are not, New Zealanders are sometimes not good at self-promotion or even getting a promotional team. One of my acquaintances at Weta has just put out a film called The Cure, and he's been working on that for 2 years or something. But he's not a native New Zealander, but yeah, that doesn't matter. The fact is he made it in New Zealand, and I'm not going to claim it, you know, particularly, but you know, he did it here. And there are a lot of projects being done in New Zealand, which often come out overseas, of course. New Zealand is something of a filmmaking destination to a point. But like Spartacus, for instance, was shot and did a lot of the visual effects, or if not all of the visual effects, up in Auckland. So there's a film by Taika Waititi, which has just come out, called What We Do in Darkness or Shadows. Sorry, I may get that name wrong, but it just came out, I think, at Sundance to some great reviews, which is it's a mockumentary. And the bits I've seen from it, from the trailers, I really want to see it myself. So sometimes these things we just have to look for. But to a certain extent, if we can compete on the world stage without specifically saying, I am a New Zealander and this is New Zealand, therefore you should watch it, that's kind of where I'd prefer it to be. I'm quite happy to use the, you know, if I was publicizing a film I'd made, I would be quite happy to use the New Zealand connection if it helped, but not as a club to beat people over the head with. Because ultimately, whatever we do, whether it's writing or film or whatever, it has to stand as a good piece of work. It can't just be because I'm a New Zealander or American or whatever nationality or race or ethnicity, whatever you want it to do, it can help. It can be a facet of what's being done, but it can't be the whole gem. Otherwise you lose applicability. You lose significance to a lot of people. I firmly believe, you know, there's art should affect you, and what we do is art. Film, books, whatever, is art. And art needs to affect you in some way. If it does nothing, if it's just meh, then it's pointless. And you may hate it. Your emotional response may be, rah, why, you know, and this is terrible, or I disagree or something. But if the emotional response is eh, then you fail. And I don't actually hold with cinema of the shocking or books of the shocking or whatever, just for the sake of shocking. But it can make us think as well. And that's partly, it's a really complicated thing. I mean, and nobody really can define art to a certain extent, but that's my little corner of it, is it provides, you have a response to it in some way or another. So it has to stand on, basically it has to stand on its own in that way. That didn't really answer the question too much of what we might have coming out, because I'm sadly not, I've been stuck in my little hole for a while, so there's not a lot of stuff I know about. But like, for instance, the New Zealand Film Commission get films off the ground and will get them made, but it's largely New Zealand Film Commission can only spend so much money. You know, it's only so much money to spend on specifically New Zealand funded films. So some of what they do is to try and get co-production funding from overseas, which is always a good idea. You can get a lot more money that way, and then help distribution. And so New Zealand Film Commission would be a website to go to. They will always have the details of New Zealand films coming out and films they've helped with. So, yeah, that was a bit rambly, but yeah, and then kind of put a little bit of a artistic spin on that, hopefully. But yeah, that's kind of my, it's very important to me that we be able to stand, you know, New Zealand can punch above its weight, can and does punch above its weight, as we've seen. But we have to do it because we do a good job, not just because we're in New Zealand. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, no, sure. All right, so why don't we just, I'll just pick random. We'll jump to Helen on maybe perhaps more specifically on books.
Yeah. In terms of, so the question is where to find New Zealand literature, right? or New Zealand books, ECFF books. So
places... The question is not just where to find them, but which ones do you think, like, if you could recommend books that you really think that are worth us checking out, what would you especially recommend?
Okay. All right. Well, in terms of where to look, so people can sort of check things out for themselves, like the films, there's not a lot of places to go, I don't think. But I mentioned Specfic NZ, and that they have a blog site, and there's a number of authors, you know, who are affiliated with that. So obviously that's a place you can look. If you're interested in specific books, and it's only books, unfortunately, not short fiction as well, but SF Fans, for the Sir Julius Vogel Award every year, they keep a list of the New Zealand books that are published, or books by New Zealand authors that are published. So for novels, that's a really good, you know, checking out that list can be really good. Other than that, I'm not really aware of any kind of specific places that sort of, you know, collate what's New Zealand specfic. But in terms of what I'd recommend, I always find this question really difficult. I do talk quite a lot on my blog about, you know, books that I read that I like. I say I don't do reviews because I only talk about stuff I like. But it's not specifically just New Zealand writing, but so authors that I, you know, that I really like and think are worthwhile, in terms of the kind of stories they're telling, I think that Elizabeth Knox's Dream as in the Dream Hunter and Dream Quake, is quite interesting in terms of the ideas in it. Uses the landscape in New Zealand landscape in a really interesting way. I mentioned Karen Healy earlier, Guardian of the Dead, really, really liked that book. And I also really liked her I don't know if it is her most recent one, but the one I most recently read, which was another YA, but set in Australia this time, but those environmental themes, When We Wake is what it's called, When We Wake, environmental themes are really good. And I mentioned Kellyanne Amore's Bloom, a more recent novel, culturally hybrid kind of novel, magic, realism, elements. Also really enjoyed that. And not just because Stephen's on the panel, but I think the first book he published, Stephen, was a book called The Prince of Soul and the Lighthouse.
Yes.
Frederick Brunius, who is a Swedish author but lives in New Zealand, in Dunedin, wrote a wonderful, humorous YA sort of coming-of-age novel, which I spent a lot of time laughing out loud while I was reading, and it's not really something that... I associate with New Zealand fiction as laughing out loud, so it's sort of one out of the box for that. So that's just a handful. What I can't think of, and I hope the others will correct me if, I can. Okay, I was going to say, I can't think of anyone with a big, you know, with a big backlist, so I can say, oh, you must get into this author, and then you'll have this huge backlist and, you know, hours of enjoyment. But in fact, Margaret Mahi, who's a children's author, who died only last year, but she's written a huge number of, not huge, but, you know, a significant body of work. And one of her most famous books is probably The Changeover, which I believe is published internationally. But once again, we're talking kids box, and I think there is just very little adult fantasy that really kind of leaps out at me as being New Zealand, and this body of work there. Anyway, that's me.
Excellent. Well, and Norman put his hand up, so you want to jump in real quick, and then we'll go to Stephen?
Yeah, just quickly. But if you go to the SF Fans website, sffans.org.nz, there's a lists link in the menu, and we have a list there of many, you know, most hopefully New Zealand authors and what they've written. And yeah, so there's quite a few there if people are interested. Yeah, thank you.
Excellent. Sure. All right, and Stephen, same questions to you.
Yeah, I think I can help Helen out there. Helen was saying that she couldn't think of a New Zealand fantasy author who's, you know, got a growing body of work that someone should check out. There's a author from Christchurch by the name of Helen Lowe who's who's been writing a really great series. Heir of Night was the first book, and really good, thoroughly worth checking out. And I believe there are more books on the way. Some of the other panelists may know more about that than me. I'm also not aware of a New Zealand website that has a particular focus on reviewing New Zealand books, or New Zealand science fiction and fantasy, at least, which is a shame because I think that'd be really cool. But definitely the Sir Julius Vogel Award shortlist as well is a really good starting point, with a list there of, you know, the how many are in the shortlist, Norman? 3 or 4 novels? Is it 3?
You mean the shortlists that we get? No, the shortlists could be between 5 and 7. So.
Oh, okay. Right. So between 5 and 7 novels then each year by New Zealand authors, which is definitely a really good starting point for looking for recently published stuff. The one book that springs to mind that if I had someone visiting me and they said I'd like to read a New Zealand speculative fiction book, I would always point them towards The Vintner's Luck by Elizabeth Knox. It's absolutely the book that made me think that New Zealanders could write fantastic speculative fiction and have it published here and do well internationally. Fantastic book. And I've read it a bunch of times, and every time I read it, I just remember why I love it so much. Really, really good book. And, of course, anything published by Steam Press is wonderful as well. That's steampress.co.nz.
Of course, right? excellent. Okay, so just before we close out here, just so people can find all of you guys, so they can check out, you know, your work or, your work, I mean, in general. Unless you don't have an online presence, if you are a hobbit and you live in a hole. That seems like a really kind of silly reference now to make. Considering, but it's relevant. But we'll start with you, Helen. Where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Yes, I have a website and a blog, and I'm on Twitter. So what they're looking for is www.helenlow, or one word, low with an E, .info. And that will get you the website, and the blog is in the navigation panel, but it's basically the same www.helenlow.info/blog to get the blog. And I'm also on Twitter at Helen Low. The only thing to remember is that the O in Low is a zero, not an O, rather. Sorry. You won't be.
Excellent. We'll make sure people have links to that, but they can go check that out. What about you, Norman?
SF, I've probably got two. These aren't personal, but these are the ones that I'm kind of seeing to a certain extent. Is the SF Fans website, which is SF Fans, sffanz.org.nz. And there's various things. That's the organization. I'm actually currently president of SFNs. And there's the awards there. We're actually accepting nominations right now until... it's nominations close quite soon, if they have not already. There we go. There's my vague sort of thing I really should know about. 15th of February they close.
Okay.
So the... that's a good place to look for a lot of New Zealand things, also reviews, but not specifically of New Zealand books, but they are in there. But also the New Zealand Worldcon bid is at nzin2020.org. It's a fairly plain page at the moment. I'm going to be updating it shortly with a whole lot of information that we've been getting over the last little while. But if you do go, if you like it via the Facebook link on the page or sign up to the newsletter, which you can just with your email address, that would be great because we'll send information shortly about supporting it. And if I can make a little plug here for those in New Zealand or elsewhere who are listening, we're going to need a lot of people to help with this. Worldcons are big. And there's a lot of little jobs that need to be done, and we'd really appreciate hearing from you. Thank you.
Excellent. I'll make sure, because I would really, really like it to go to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And in 2020, I might be able to afford it.
There you go.
Excellent. Okay, and what about you, Steve? Where can folks find out about you?
I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @steampress, and online I'm www.steampress.co.nz.
Excellent. And they can find out about all of the 10 trillion books that you've published already?
Absolutely. Yep. They're all there. Easy to find.
And just to be clear, your books are, I'm assuming they're available in multiple formats for...
Yes. Almost all. There's one, I believe, which isn't freely available because of international rights, blah, complications. But most of them are up on Amazon Kobo, wherever people normally buy books in paper or digital form.
Excellent. Perfect. Well, thank you all of you, for coming on here, talking about, your experiences with genre fiction, in New Zealand, speculative fiction, all of that stuff. It's really great to get that perspective. I'll just go left to right and just kind of say thanks individually. But thank you, Helen, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. And thank you, Norman.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. And good luck on the bid.
Thanks. Luck is not a factor.
Fair enough. And thank you, Stephen.
Thank you so much. I've had a great time. Yeah.
And obviously, thanks, Julia, for being my co-host ninja.
Hey, it was awesome to get to talk to all these interesting people.
Excellent. Perfect. All right. Well, we will see everybody next time with whatever is the next episode. So, awkward ending. And scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.
Hey everybody, welcome to the World SF Tour, our special feature throughout the year in which we're obviously celebrating World SF. There are a number of ways you could support this show, just really quick. One is you could subscribe to the show. We're on iTunes, we have the blog, all that good stuff. There's all kinds of cool stuff on the blog, too, you should check out. That's one way you could support us. You can obviously let people know about us. That's really cool when people do that, link to us and all that good stuff. And the other way is actually to go to audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty, sign up for 1 month free trial membership. You get a free audiobook out of the deal. You get to try their service if you like it, to keep it, which is cool. And that's really that simple. So That helps us as much as the rest of it does. But in any case, thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoy this year, this very specially themed year. And of course, if we missed anything, which we're undoubtedly going to do, feel free to let us know. Send us an email or leave a comment or something. Maybe even on some of our discussion episodes, you let us know about some great works from a certain region that we should be talking about. So in any case, I'll let you get to the episode, and I hope you enjoy it.